thank you for joining us for another edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's most listened to farm radio network. For the next 30 minutes, we'll bring you the top news and information from this past week in Indiana and U.S. agriculture. Stories like why Indianapolis was chosen by USDA as one of their relocation hubs. When can we expect the rest of the story on the rest of the farm bill? And how the New World screwworm, which has been infecting livestock, was found in a human traveling from overseas. We also spent some time this week at the Farm Progress Show in Decatur, Illinois. We'll have coverage coming up. Grain market analysis and the Indiana Farm Forecast with Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martiner headed your way in just minutes. But let's begin today's show in Decatur, where I caught up with Deputy Secretary of Agriculture Stephen Vaden. As we've previously reported, USDA will soon be moving many of its major operations out of Washington, D.C. and in to Indianapolis and four other regional hubs. I asked him when we might know more about what USDA jobs will be headed to Indy.
We're in a comment period right now. That comment period goes to the 1st of September. So we're listening to feedback from stakeholders, from citizens, from members of Congress, giving us ideas on what they think it makes sense to move and why a particular regional hub may be best suited to a particular part of our organization. So that's why we haven't made final announcements about that.
Vaden shared why Indianapolis was chosen as one of the five hubs. He said it was simple. Indianapolis fit what they were looking for perfectly.
USDA already has a footprint in the Midwest. Indianapolis is a wonderful location to build on that footprint. There is government office space available that the taxpayer is already paying for and that we can move into without any added cost to the taxpayer because they're already paying for it. And the cost of living in Indianapolis is literally half that of Washington, D.C.
Vaden pointed out that D.C. is one of the most expensive locations in the U.S., only trailing New York and San Francisco. All the locations chosen will significantly decrease the cost of living.
Which means that employees who are located in Indianapolis in the future are more likely to stay with the agency long term because they can have a better quality of life, which means that we get to keep their institutional knowledge for longer at USDA and not worry about attrition, which you see in high cost of living places like Washington, D.C.
Vaden added that they need the maximum number of people possible that work for USDA in the field, because that's where the heart of USDA and the constituents they serve is, and Indianapolis fit the bill. Vaden also told reporters that USDA is considering a bridge policy to help farmers facing low commodity prices. He says that farmers and those at USDA are grateful for the provisions in the One Big Beautiful Bill. However,
we know that many of the most important pieces of the One Big Beautiful Bill don't come into effect until 2026. So the question is, and we don't get the Commodity Credit Corporation re-upped until really November of this year. And that's after the harvest is largely completed for our corn and soybean farmers.
He says the goal is to get farmers from this growing season to next growing season while they wait for those provisions to kick in.
Now, part of that is the Emergency Commodity Assistance Program, the $8 billion that we have laid out, the Supplemental Disaster Relief Program, the first tranche of which is about $4 billion total that we've laid out. The second tranche will be announced in September, which will cover crop losses that were not covered by crop insurance, and there may be future announcements to come in that respect as well. But all of that is only a partial answer. We are seeking to develop policy solutions to help bridge that, and that's what the Secretary and I are working on and what she's constantly talking to not only the President but other members of her cabinet about.
Vaden didn't offer additional details on what the policy could look like. USDA Secretary Brooke Rollins was in D.C. for a cabinet meeting with President Trump when Vaden attended the Farm Progress Show on Tuesday. In other news, Seymour-based Premier Companies and Huntingburg-based Superior Ag have announced they're exploring the possibility of a merger. The two farmer-owned ag cooperatives say that such a move has been approved by their respective boards of directors. Both companies say that a unified cooperative could bring substantial benefits, including increased buying power, better market access, and consistent supply, expanded employee opportunities, financial cost savings, and greater reinvestment into facilities and operations. If you'd like to read more about this, visit HoosierAgToday.com. We're just about 5 minutes away now from Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin's Indiana Farm Forecast. We'll have more farm news coming up on Hoosier Ag this week as well. But right now, let's check in with Andy Eubank. He takes a look at the week that was in the markets. Hello, Andy.
Hello, Eric. And throughout the week, it was back and forth in the markets. We ended, however, on a rally across the board. We'll have those numbers coming up. Let's get some comments first from Brian Basting, Advanced Trading. I checked in with him in the middle of the Friday trading session. Going into the long Labor Day holiday weekend, higher, led by the corn market, a late turnaround. Finally, beans went higher as well. So, Brian, a little bit of life in the markets as we expected, maybe some flat trade and positioning going into the weekend and month end.
Thanks for having me, Andy. You summarized that well. So there is some life to the markets here. I think we probably saw some short covering in the markets, particularly corn, as the month of August came to a conclusion. And there seems to be some concern growing that the yields from this 2025 crop may not achieve those USDA numbers. Now, I'm not going out on a limb too far when I say that it's still too early to tell, but the Pro Farmer Tour did show yields lower than what the USDA provided there back in earlier this month, early in August. Some private tours are confirming the same thing. I would say, though, that some private tours are also quite high. So it's not universal out there. And there is some concern, Andy, though, that rust is being observed in some part of the corn, some disease issues here and there. So one way or another, all that to put in a pot, if you will, it's the ingredient for volatility. And we've seen volatility surface here as the month came to an end with some short covering and a decent bounce. So I think that recipe for volatility, as it were, Andy, is going to be with us for a while. So I'd encourage your listeners to remain flexible in their marketing. Respect what the market can do, both to the downside and to the upside, and then plan accordingly. But we'll get more proof in the pudding, as it were, when we get into September. And of course, the combines roll here, but still quite a bit of uncertainty. There would add one other factor there, Andy, that's supporting the corn market, especially a very robust export sales pace for new crop corn that we're seeing right now for a variety of reasons. But the book that we have on for new crop corn, if you add in what we haven't shipped yet for 2024-25, the combined unshipped book of old and new crop corn export sales is the second highest ever. So we're really looking at the potential for a pretty good export program this fall. So maybe that played into the mix too.
And that bounce on Friday led to corn jumping up to around the 420 level, safely above the $4 mark. So nice to see that, at least for now.
It is nice to see that. I think we're seeing since that market bottomed out, if you will, for the short term. I'm not saying it was a bottom, but bottomed out for the short term. Right after that report on August 12th, corn has had about nearly a 25, 30 cent rally here. So again, I think we're still looking at some prices for new crop that are a little bit weaker on corn relative to soybeans. Soybeans now for new crop are in almost all areas above $10 now for the fall, whereas corn is mostly below $4 yet for the fall. So hearing a little more interest from the producers across the scale potential sales for beans, given that environment. But yes, so it is a welcome sign for producers to see the corn market bouncing up here. We'll get a lot of news here coming at us in early September.
Market commentary from Brian Basting of Advanced Trading. Get Brian on the phone at 309-664-2314 if you would like to talk things over. Settlements now and a strong close on Friday for the markets. December and March corn both finishing up a dime and a quarter. Dece 420 and a quarter, March 430, 7 3/4. Up an even dime on the May contract, 440, 7 3/4. Beans came along for the ride too. November, 10.54 1/2, up 6 1/2 cents. Jan, 10.72 1/2, up 5 3/4. March, an even nickel higher, 10.87. And December, wheat and nickel and a quarter up, 5.34 1/4. Meats higher too. October live cattle, 239.65, up $2.72. And October lean hogs, 95.02, up 75. And that's the market recap here on the weekend show. Much more still to come. I'm Andy Eubank. This is Hoosier Ag This Week.
Our weather looks pretty doggone boring over the next 2 to 3 weeks. I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin with Hoosier Ag Today's Indiana Farm Forecast Weekend Edition. And this forecast can pretty easily be summed up. The weather pattern that we are in is the fronts every Thursday pattern. So to understand this pattern, we have to go back and look at this past week first. When did we see our rain this past week? A frontal boundary that came through overnight Wednesday night into Thursday. That's when we saw the bulk of the moisture this week. It didn't fall everywhere, but where it did fall, that was the time frame. Behind it, cooler, drier air in play. That's what we're dealing with for this weekend. Keep in mind it is a longer 3-day holiday weekend, but we're going to be moving into that pattern and putting together beautiful weather for today, tomorrow, and Labor Day Monday. Temperatures still on the cool side for today and tomorrow. I do think we start to raise temperatures a bit as we move into Monday. The temperatures continue to moderate and get warmer for Tuesday and Wednesday. Watching a minor disturbance try and come up from the south into far southern Indiana Tuesday afternoon. I won't rule out a pop-up shower in a few locations there. I think it's a bigger story over southern and southwestern parts of Ohio. But while that is forming there, watching another weather system come together in the upper Midwest, moving through Lake Superior and the UP. And this is going to be a front that sweeps through later Wednesday night and into early Thursday. So this is the front every Thursday pattern. I'm taking liberties there a little bit because it's really going to be late Wednesday afternoon, Wednesday evening into Thursday. Most of Thursday will be drier, but you get the idea. There's moisture coming. A tenth to 3/4 inch is what I'm penciling in out of that front right now, and that'll be as we move into late the third into the fourth. Following it up behind it, guess what? Back to the cool, dry stuff. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, quite cool, pleasant, low humidity, good drying. Is summer over? No. Stick with me. We'll go into the week of the 8th, and we'll talk about that a little bit. But for the end of next week and next weekend, it is cool and pleasant. Temperatures warm back up then going into the week of the 8th. Monday the 8th, Tuesday the 9th, temperatures back to above normal levels. What does this do? Well, it starts to bring up some instability. Warmer temperatures hit midweek as well. And guess what? Another front shows up Wednesday night into Thursday, the week of the 8th. So we're talking right about September 11th, 10th into the 11th there. We'll be watching for a front. This one not as impressive at this point. I'm going to say a few hundredths to half an inch. Coverage, though, still about 75% of the Hoosier State. And you know what comes after that. But I don't think it's quite as cool that time around. I do think some of the warmer air holds behind the front that comes through in the middle part of that week, and we should keep temperatures normal to slightly above normal as we move into the middle part of September. Is it enough moisture over the next 3 weeks? Probably not, but we do have some coming through. I'm Ryan Martin.
Hey, farmers need equipment? Check out Purple Wave Auction every other Wednesday. They're running ag auctions where everything sells, no reserve, no games. What I love is how they let you talk directly with sellers. Got questions about that tractor? Just ask. That's the kind of hometown service you want. But here's the kicker. Your equipment gets seen by buyers across the entire country. Whether you're buying or selling, jump into Purple Wave's auction rhythm at purplewave.com. Purple Wave Auction. Sold means sold.
Welcome back to Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm Greg Allen. Well, if you have been following along at home or in the tractor or in your soccer mom van on your way to pick up or drop off the kiddos, you've heard us talking about our alliance with Purdue Extension on a new podcast network called Hoosier Ag Today Presents Your Purdue Extension. We've had a great time so far getting to know the extension a little bit better, and we hope you've had the opportunity to check those podcasts out. But if you haven't yet, here's a sample for you.
Purdue Extension Health and Human Sciences, we provide education to individuals and communities in each of Indiana's diverse counties. And we really bring the university information to the local level, whether it be in person or online offerings, to help people strengthen relationships, eat smart, improve health, and achieve financial wellness.
That was Lisa Graves, interim HHS program leader on the function of Purdue Extension Health and Human Services. Graves was recently featured on a new podcast called Your Health, which falls under the umbrella of the Hoosier Ag Today Presents Your Purdue Extension Podcast Network. Graves went on to explain the function of the HHS.
We think about those topic areas being food, family, money, and health. And so we're identifying the needs within communities in those topic areas. working closely with our faculty in the College of Health and Human Sciences and across Purdue's campus to determine what are the best ways that we can meet those community and individual needs around food, family, money, and health.
The new podcast network is a collaboration between the Extension and Hoosier Ag Today, and it was formed to better educate the public on each of Purdue Extension's program areas. You can find the Your Health podcast and all of the new podcasts in video form at HoosierAgToday.com and in audio wherever you listen to your podcasts. Well, you've been hearing quite a bit lately about the new world screwworm in Mexico and in Central America and the harmful impact that the pests can have on cattle, horses, and other animals. But the CDC announced that a person, that's right, a human person from Maryland, was recently found to be infected. Ugh, gives me the heebie-jeebies. C.J. Miller has more.
You know, from what we understand, it was an individual who had made a trip to one of the countries in Central America, came back, had some pain, went to seek treatment, and discovered that they were infested with New World screwworm larvae.
That's Colin Woodall, CEO of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association.
But we do know that the protocol worked, and that individual was treated and the larvae were destroyed. And while, yes, it's surprising to see that particular story, you know, it's not shocking.
And even though this recent human case is something the cattle industry is monitoring, Woodall says it does not present a risk to the U.S. livestock industry.
We are taking a serious approach to protecting ourselves from New World screwworm. The things that we're looking at is, one, did the protocols work? And it's obvious that the protocols worked. And let's think about this for a minute from a human standpoint. If you go travel and somehow the New World screwworm female lays its eggs somewhere in your body, you come back to the United States, you're going to have excruciating pain because these larvae, these maggots, are going to be eating you alive. So you're going to go seek some sort of treatment.
USDA has closed off imports of cattle from Mexico and Central America to prevent New World screwworm from coming into the U.S. and possibly infecting America's beef and dairy herds. Read the full story at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm C.J. Miller.
The One Big Beautiful Bill Act included over $65 billion of new spending for agriculture. It increased reference prices, expanded crop insurance coverage options, boosted funding for trade and research, and made many tax cuts important to farmers permanent. However, work still needs to be done on passing the rest of the farm bill, on what many are calling a skinny farm bill. The skinny farm bill, a stripped-down version of the massive legislation that typically shapes U.S. food and agriculture policy, keeps core programs running, like crop insurance, conservation funding, and food assistance through SNAP, but it delays bigger reforms.
I think that the things that are left in the farm bill are generally non-controversial. These are things that are supported by both political parties. Both parties support farm credit. Both parties support conservation. Both parties support young farmer grant programs. Both parties support Buy America programs. So it's unfortunate that the coalition wasn't able to stay together to pass a farm bill like we've done in the past years for the full bill. But I do think that this is an opportunity to bring people back together so that we can have future farm bills down the road.
That was Dwayne Simpson, president and CEO of the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives. Critics say the skinny bill is a missed opportunity to address climate change and help small farmers struggling with rising costs. Supporters, however, argue it's a necessary step to avoid disruption and buy more time for negotiation.
Right now, what we're hearing is from, you know, in the House, they're going to start probably a little sooner in the House, hoping to get it done in September. In the Senate, Senator Bozeman has said that he hopes to have it finished by the end of the year.
If passed, the skinny bill would extend key programs through 2025, giving Congress another shot at a comprehensive update. The American Soybean Association is urging President Trump to remove Chinese tariffs on U.S. soybeans and seek commitments for future purchases, warning that retaliatory tariffs are shutting America's soybean producers out of their largest export market going into this year's harvest. Let's hear from C.J. Miller, who has more on this story.
Mike Steenhook is executive director of the Soy Transportation Coalition, and he says there are several reasons why China has become the largest buyer of U.S. soybeans over the past 25 years.
One of the bullet points you would write would be large population. Another bullet point would be increasing per capita income. A third bullet point would be insatiable demand for pork for human consumption. You would have another bullet point that would say insatiable demand for poultry for human consumption. And then the final one would be cooking methodology utilizes a lot of oil for frying. And that in a nutshell is the Chinese market.
Read the full story at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm C.J. Miller, Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.
Hey, we've got more Hoosier Ag This Week coming your way. Stay tuned.
AgBioscience, the number one ag tech podcast globally, is now available on video. Hear the latest from innovators in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture.
The people have always been so special because there are those bad moments. You walk out to the barn and there's a pig limping. There's a pig that decided to shuck her hair, or there's a pig that's sick. So it's the moments here, and it's not always the banner because there's not many banners to be had for the number of pigs that are here. And so you have to find joy in the little things and the sitting waiting to get our pins and everything like that with my siblings, with my family. And it's also been great recently. I've been able to meet different people also going to Purdue. Mm-hmm. So although the workload is heavy, there's always a lot of happy moments. And it's also the work ethic. You always hear about the work ethic of livestock kids. And from what I can see, it's so true.
Get more episodes online at agrinovisindiana.com. Click on podcasts. Also available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Thanks for sticking with us here on Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today. We're running down the top news in Indiana and U.S. agriculture. Leadership in Action was the focus of the recent Quadrant event hosted by Agrinovis Indiana. They hosted a panel discussion recently with several leaders from ag businesses and academia as they offered their leadership advice. C.J. Miller has more from the event.
Surround yourself with the best people. That is absolutely number one.
That's Kevin Still, president and CEO of Keystone Cooperative, who shared with Hoosier Ag Today his keys to being a strong ag business leader.
Don't be afraid to take chances. Know your businesses. Pay attention to the details. I think one that served me really well is I'm relentlessly persistent, and I'm always looking for the next thing.
And during that panel discussion, he also talked about the motto that's driven him as a CEO for the past 41 years. If you're not growing, you're dying.
Customers are continuing to grow. We got to stay on their radar. We got to stay on our vendors' radar so we can take advantage of the best prices, terms, products. And then we want the kind of employees that want to work for a growth company. I would just say go for it. Don't be afraid to take chances. Don't be afraid to challenge the status quo. But still make sure you keep your head down, do your job extremely well. But again, ask questions and be innovative.
You can watch my full video interview with Kevin Still from the Agrinovis Indiana Quadrant event. It's at HoosierAgToday.com and the Hoosier Ag Today channel on YouTube. I'm C.J. Miller.
All right, C.J., thanks. This past week, Farm Progress Show took place in Decatur, Illinois. Greg Allen and I had the opportunity to visit the Farm Progress Show grounds, and boy, what a week it was, especially weather-wise. No rain, no 100-degree temperatures. It was a nice mid to low 70s throughout the week and just a fantastic time there. And while we were there, we took in some of the big equipment and some of the smaller equipment, too, like what you can find at Can-Am. Simon Casale, Vice President of Marketing for Can-Am, tells us about the new 2026 Defender HD11, what he says is the best Defender yet.
It's a new engine, new chassis, to bring more performance for the heavy task, the heavy load. Also reduce maintenance requirements on this new platform. One of the most important thing that farmers were, you know, telling us, which like more performance HVAC, more silence in the cabin. If you drive this, you can talk to your neighbor. Like it's super quiet when you work on your property.
So why is it so important that farmers get one of these utility vehicles on the farm?
Farmers, depending on the size of their operation, have their, you know, their big machinery, but they need a Defender to move around their property with their tools, with smaller piece of equipment to move people around. So they need that Defender for that purpose. They, you know, and let's be honest, this is also a fun machine to ride. So they use it during the weekend too. So it's for work. It's built for work. It's the most durable platform out there, but it's also a fun product to ride.
While there at the Farm Progress Show, they certainly had more than just the Defender.
Casley explains.
One thing we're super proud that we launched last week is the new Outlander Electric. That's our ATV electric. That's the first mass-produced electric ATV out there. We also launched our 6x6, also super useful for farmers.
For more information, you can visit Can-Am's website. You can find a link to that site at HoosierAgToday.com. And it wasn't just equipment at the Farm Progress Show. Some were advocating for certain issues like the Modern Ag Alliance. They were advocating for U.S. farmers' access to the crop protection tools they need. Greg Allen got the opportunity to sit down with them at the Farm Progress Show.
Glyphosate-based pesticides are farmers' number one tool to control weeds, keep yields high, and implement conservation practices that use less land and resources. But a lack of legislative certainty around pesticide labeling has fueled costly litigation and efforts to regulate pesticides in a manner inconsistent with federal law and congressional intent and based on scientifically unsound considerations. Enter Modern Ag Alliance.
We are a coalition of well over 100 different organizations from all across the country, state commodity groups, agribusiness associations from coast to coast that have gotten together to work proactively to ensure that farmers have access to those critical crop protection tools.
That's Elizabeth Burns Thompson, Executive Director of Modern Ag Alliance. And while glyphosate is the focus today, if not addressed, the future of valuable crop protection tools and critical innovations may be at stake.
It's been kind of the bellwether, what we believe, of what the rest of the chemistry industry stands to face if we don't have some solutions on this. So we've worked proactively to ensure that at the end of the day, the label is the law.
Fortunately, state-based legislation has been introduced to provide the legislative certainty needed to protect farmers' access to these safe and approved tools.
There's a potential solution that could be part of a skinny farm bill as we, you know, tee up Congress comes back after the August recess, and it's also part of the appropriations process right now on the House side. So we are very optimistic that that train will continue to move forward. We're hoping to see some collaboration on the Senate side in that respect too, but this is a really critical problem, and so we are truly leaving no stone left unturned.
For more information, go to modernagalliance.org. I'm Greg Allen, Hoosier Ag Today, timely, relevant, credible.
And that does it for this edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. Thank you so much for joining us. We certainly appreciate it. We'll do it again next weekend, same hat time, same hat channel. I'm Eric Pfeiffer, Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.